Welcome to another episode of the Phoenix Rising Podcast. I am your host, Lisa Hillier, and today I have Cheyenne Pilch on the show with me. And I came across Cheyenne on Instagram with her truth-telling reels that I really resonated with. And Cheyenne is a nutritional therapy practitioner, and she speaks to all the realms of coming into your optimal health, intuitively knowing what your body needs and what it is actually desiring. She speaks to ancestral healing, free birth, really coming into a deep communion with the self so that you are rooted and sovereign. And we go into so many juicy topics in this podcast around the state of the world, where we're being manipulated and lied to, and how to take your power back and really stand sovereign in who you are. And so can't wait to dive into this episode with Cheyenne, with you. And I have just recently launched my Bison Beauty and Beef Babe creams, as well as tallow soap. I absolutely love making soap. I didn't know I was a real soap maker at heart, but here we are. And so there is a link in the show notes to check out Bison Beauty, Beef Babe, and the Bison Tallow soaps that I am handcrafting, and it's all the purest ingredients, no fragrances, no toxins, no seed oils, no palm oils, none of that stuff, just pure whole ingredients. So definitely check that out. And now let's dive in with Cheyenne. Okay. Welcome to the podcast, Cheyenne.
Hello. Happy to be here.
I'm excited for this conversation. We'll see where it threads and weaves and where we arrive. But to start, what has been the journey that has brought you to the work that you're offering the world today?
Two things. My first would definitely be my birth with my firstborn. I originally had a hospital birth, and while it wasn't a terrible experience, it also wasn't great. It opened my eyes up a lot about the business of birth and how it is exactly that. You know, it's a business. And I walked away from that experience just being like, that didn't feel good. That didn't feel like it was supposed to. And so I started asking questions about hospital birth, and ended up leading me into having a free birth at home with my second, which was amazing. So that was my first big wake up call that led me to where I am today. And the second one was when I was postpartum with my first. I didn't know this at the time, but when your stomach acid is low, you develop meat aversions, because that's basically your body's way of telling you, like, hey, I can't break down this protein. So your body just doesn't crave it, right? So I quit eating meat for about 9 months, and I thought it was fine, you know, because everything around us is like, oh, plant-based diets are the best, and meat is a class one carcinogen. And so I was like, well, looks like meat's not really that good for me anyway, so I don't think it's going to hurt anything. Turns out that that's probably the worst thing that I could have done postpartum. It just trashed my health. Like, I have these old pictures of me where I just look like ghostly, and there's no color in my face. There's no life in my eyes. And I felt terrible, felt absolutely terrible. I'm 5'5". I only weighed 105 pounds, which, like, I got no business weighing 105 at 5'5". It was really bad. So my health just tanked, and I was like, well, what the heck? Like, I was, everything that you see is plant-based this and plant-based that. And so I just figured that I was doing the best thing for myself. And I'm like, okay, well, what is the optimal human diet? Like, what does that look like? And so I started looking into primal-based eating, ancestral eating, and started following that type of diet. And it was amazing, like the 180 that my health took. I even have before and after pictures of me on my Instagram from when I was plant-based to when I started eating meat. And like, I am a totally different person. My skin is glowing. My mental clarity is back. Like, I feel better than I did in my 20s. And I just became so passionate about health and wellness and wanting to teach people, like, hey, here are the, like, regardless of what the propaganda is telling you, eating healthy is not complicated. It's what our ancestors ate. So that's what got me to where I am today.
I saw the picture of you. I think it was a reel, and it showed the picture of you when you were vegan or vegetarian. And I was also vegan and vegetarian for 6.5 years. And my sister always told me I looked gray, but I didn't believe her. But then when I saw the picture of you, I was like, she looks gray compared to how you look now. And I was like, wow. Like, I think when you're in it, you don't see it. And then, you know, outside of it, I could look at the picture of you and I'm like, you look so different, like different to now. And I'd say for myself, like when I started drinking bison broth, that was my thing back. And it was like life just came back into my eyes.
What got you to that point? Like, why did you start eating meat again?
Yeah, my body started craving it, but my hormones were out of whack. I was missing periods. I was missing periods, like no libido, just like that part of me was dead. So I was like, something's not right. And unfortunately, I didn't catch it in time. I went into early menopause at 41 and had huge issues with mental health and all that kind of stuff. When I was vegan, vegetarian, I was like, I'm nailing this. Like, I'm doing this so well. I feel great. And then until I didn't, you know, and I think that's, there's a big message out there now about plant-based and all that kind of stuff that I'm sure we'll go into more. But sometimes you feel really good on it until you don't. But then sometimes it's too late.
There's actually a reason for that. So plants are really good for purifying the body. So when people initially go plant-based, you know, they're doing a lot of things that purify the body and detox the body. And your body has stores of nutrients that it can take from when it needs it. But after a while, those stores start to run out. And then when they run out is typically when people start to get really symptomatic. So yeah, that's the thing, right? It's like you feel good until you don't.
Until you don't. And then it's like, oh, shit. Yeah. I really don't feel good. I had a I have a friend and she was pregnant and vegan. And it's like the baby will get everything that the baby needs, but it'll take it from the mom. You know, so then she got really sick with it. So yeah, it's a weird dynamic, I guess, because people that do vegan vegetarian think that they're doing the right thing for the betterment of society, for climate and all this other like, agendas that are going on. So yeah, let's, can you speak to ancestral eating and what that looks like, and also like the truth on meat for you in regards to what it actually does for your body and as well for the environment.
Absolutely.
If anything comes up for you around that.
So if there are any vegans and vegetarians listening, I think something really important to note is factory farming is abhorrent. It's terrible. Like, just because I eat meat doesn't mean that I support any of that. It's abusive to animals. In fact, chickens are one of the most abused animals in the world. It's horrific what these animals are going through. So I can understand people's heart in like, well, I don't want to support this, so I'll just like not support the industry. But the problem with that is like, no matter how you feel about eating animals, like humans need meat. That's just a biological fact. And I don't believe in supporting factory farming, especially because like the owners of factory farming, like they want a monopoly on meat. So they're trying to make it very hard for local ranchers to raise cattle that are grass-fed, grass-finished, that are loved and well cared for. And that's who we should be supporting because we need more of that. Not only is it good for the people that eat it, but cows have an amazing ability to actually heal our soil. So when cows eat grass and they defecate onto the grass, like those nutrients spread all over the soil and it makes the soil so rich and nutrient dense. And so of course, when you plant crops in that soil, you're going to get really healthy and nutrient dense fruits and vegetables. So it's this beautiful cycle of, using cattle in the right way that also serves the planet and it makes our food more nutrient dense. And that's something that I wish vegans and vegetarians understood. Like, it's not about no meat. It's about better meat. It's about better cattle management. It's about better land management. And I think that, like, if vegans and vegetarians knew that, like, you know, that's something we could all get behind. In fact, I don't know if you have seen this. There's a video on YouTube. It's got a couple million views. It's huge. And it's an older guy. He's got white hair and he talks about how they're using cattle to reverse climate change. So they'll put cattle in these areas where there's been desertification, which is not normal, by the way, mm-hmm. and they'll just have cows start to graze the land. And wouldn't you know it, within a couple of months to a couple of years, that land is lush and green and beautiful. So we can actually use cattle to heal the land. Like, that's why, I love cows. So yeah. Yeah, it's like, not only are they so amazing for our bodies, but gosh, when we use what we have around us the way it was intended to do, everybody wins. Everybody. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't necessarily your question, but I wanted to go into that for all the vegans and vegetarians listening. But ancestral eating, it's just what our grandparents ate. It's what our great grandparents ate. It's meat, it's organ meats, it's raw milk, you know, unpasteurized dairy, the way that we were supposed to consume it. Bone broths, like, eating fruits and vegetables that are native to where you are is the best way to go. Mm-hmm. So if you can get involved in a co-op, like, eating fruits and veggies that are native to you and in season is going to be the best thing for your body. So that's essentially it. I think people make eating healthy a lot more complicated than it needs to be.
Yeah, it can be really simple. Like, what can I get around me? And I think that's so important. Just what can you get around you if you have farmers? And I'm so blessed to live in a place where there's farms all around me and farm stands and all that kind of stuff. But I know where I used to live, more inner Canada, more colder Canada, that's not as available. But it's like, you know, making that effort and supporting those people that are producing locally, especially when, what did somebody call our grocery stores? I don't know. I can't remember, but it was just like, it's horrendous what's in our grocery stores and what they're doing to our fruits and vegetables. And so knowing where it came from is so important, and especially mm-hmm. with the animals. And then, you know, something that I got told when I was vegan, but I didn't really want to listen, was just how much it took to grow an almond tree or produce an almond. You know, like, it's insane. And how much it takes to produce these Beyond Meat burgers and these things that are not even real food. They're horrible for you and they're horrible for the environment as well. So it is like a win-win. You spoke earlier to the business of birth. Can you elaborate on that a little bit? What is the business of birth?
So
what
there's
does a free birth look like?
Sure. So there's the documentary is called The Business of Birth, and it just goes into how hospitals have monetized birth, and a lot of the interventions that are commonplace in hospitals actually lead to, like, birth sabotage. So in the US, we are, I think we're the number two in the most cesarean births behind Brazil. Don't quote me on that. I could be wrong, but we're, like, number two for the most cesarean births in the world. That's not normal. Why are so many women having emergency C-sections? And it's because every single intervention can lead to just your birth being completely sabotaged, because physiological birth is when a woman can get into her body, her innate wisdom, and move with her body. And that's free birth, right? Like, no interventions. It's just you and your body and baby progressing. And I'm not saying that, like, interventions aren't necessary, but the way that they happen here in the States, it's astronomical. Like, you've got to look at the stats and be like, what is going on here? Like, this is not the way that we're supposed to be birthing babies. And so, for example, Pitocin and epidurals cause your risk of a cesarean birth to go through the roof. And women don't know that, but think about it. Like, when you're giving birth, you're supposed to be moving. You're supposed to be swaying your hips, whatever feels comfortable for you. You get Pitocin, you get an epidural, you're laying in bed. You can't move. You can't open up your hips. And you're in the most unnatural position possible to birth the baby. There's no gravity helping you out. And it's like, it's no wonder that women are having so many traumatic births, because we are doing the complete opposite of what a physiological birth is supposed to look like. So I did not have Pitocin I did have Pitocin in the hospital. I didn't have an epidural. And while I was still able to give birth somewhat naturally, I mean, minus the Pitocin, I actually ended up taking the Pitocin needle out of my arm when my nurse came in and she was like, "Hey, let's go ahead and up your Pitocin." And I was like, "Why?" And she goes, "'Cause I'm supposed to." "'Cause you're supposed to" is the furthest thing from a competent answer. Absolutely not. So I took it out of my arm and I took things into my own hands. And I was like, I want nothing to do with the direction that you guys are pushing me in. And so when I decided to have a free birth at home, which is, I didn't have a midwife, I didn't have a doula. It was just me. It was me and my husband and my son. And best experience of my life. Oh my God. It was so amazing. And you just developed this deep love and appreciation for like what your body is capable of. And that's one reason that I am so passionate about free birth, because I'm like, women deserve to have that life transforming event that is birth. They deserve to be connected with their bodies. They deserve not to be traumatized during one of the most life transformative events of their life. So that's why, and I'm not saying that things don't happen. They do. If you feel like if it would feel better for you to have a midwife and a doula, I think that's fantastic. A free birth is just something that I decided to do, especially previously having a natural birth. I felt pretty confident with it. But for all women out there that are scared of birth, it takes a lot of preparation. It's kind of like prepping for a marathon. So much of it is mental, but like, gosh, if you can lean into it, it's incredible. It'll change your life.
I had Pitocin when I was pregnant with my daughter as well. That's to like induce labor, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't remember them ever explaining the risks of cesarean or anything like that.
Well, what's interesting about Pitocin.
I did have a natural birth, but.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. I was exactly like you. I had Pitocin and no epidural. And.
And that's rare. Most women that get Pitocin end up having emergency C-sections, because what it does is it makes your contractions too fast and too close together. So a lot of women who get Pitocin in the epidural, the doctors will say like, "Oh, it's caused like your baby's heart rate is dropping. Mom's heart rate is dropping." So obviously like the mom thinks, "Oh, this is my fault. Something's wrong with my body. Something's wrong with my baby." And it's like, no, this is just not the way that birth was intended to be. Contractions too hard, too fast, stressing out baby. And that's typically, "Oh, we have to cut you open." But they don't tell women that. They don't tell them about the risk. They don't tell them that Pitocin was never approved for induction use. Did you know that? Never been approved.
No.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
That's crazy.
So crazy.
I've never heard of the documentary, The Birth Business of Birth. I've watched the one, The Business of Birth Control. Is that a separate one?
I haven't seen that one.
Okay. Business of Birth. But it is interesting for women to know that they make more money each surgery.
Oh, yeah. And even a lot of women don't know this too, but they sell, this isn't consensual at all. Like, they don't tell mothers this. They sell your placenta, and they can sell for upwards to $50,000.
Wow.
They don't tell women that. Why do they get
so much money for it?
All the nutrients in them, a lot of like the stuff in the placenta and even the foreskin, because we're like the highest rate of circumcised babies in the country too. What do they use that foreskin for? They sell it to the beauty industries because it's rich in collagen. There's something really high end that you can get. It's called a foreskin facial. So they're like cutting the part off of a very healthy baby boy's penis for money. So we get into the business of birth, right? The baby is a business. The mom is a business. The entire thing is a way to make money.
So interesting. I know Canada is one of the leaders in organ donors.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it's something, some creepy number of how many organ, not organ donors, but where they buy the organs, like this business of organs. And MAID has become a big thing in Canada.
I've heard about that. Yeah.
It's
self-assisted
so creepy.
Suicide.
Yeah. It's just really, it's creepy.
Very creepy.
Yeah. So free birth, what would you, cause you spoke beautifully to it, just kind of like you're preparing for a marathon, like you're preparing for this massive initiation. What would you say has helped you to, what helped you prepare for free birth?
I'm the kind of person that if I can understand something, I'm a lot more at peace with it. So for me, that looked like when I'm in labor, what does each stage look like? What is my body doing? When I'm feeling a certain sensation, I want to know what that sensation is, so I'm not blindsided by it. So a good example of that would be when women start to transition, when that baby is like dropping really low in the pelvis and it's about to come out. It's very intense. And so understanding like each progression of labor and how to support yourself through each progression was super helpful. So I followed a doula. Her Instagram is Built to Birth, and then her name is Bridget Tyler. She's on YouTube. She's incredible. But she teaches you how to breathe through each stage of labor. And like, I think that that was one of the most beneficial things for me, is understanding how to breathe. Because a lot of women, when things get intense, they do this that causes cortisol to raise, their bodies get super stressed out. And like, you just don't, you're not in a good headspace when you're stressed, right? So understanding how to control your breathing, how to support your body, how to move with your body, would be some of my biggest advice. Like so many women that I know, they're like, oh, I would love to have a natural birth. And they go into it with the best of intentions, but it's a really big event. You have to prepare, you have to plan, you have to understand. Cause if you don't, like your intentions may be all good and fine, but like it's, I wouldn't say that it's painful, but it's really intense. It's a very intense process. So that would be my, my biggest tip: educate yourself, learn how to breathe. And obviously like having support there if you need it. A lot of like, I personally, I didn't need a doula. I don't need someone to tell me like what to do or tell me things to, that's just my personality though. Yep. You know, but women who do need that emotional support, like a doula or a midwife, can be really beneficial, just kind of helping them through the process and to not get in their head and to not get stressed. Being physically fit also, like I worked out my entire pregnancy. So, you know, opening up your hips and having that flexibility, the more you take care of yourself during pregnancy, like taking care of your body, your nutrition, that's going to play a big impact into your labor. So there's a book called Real Foods for Pregnancy. And she even goes into like all of the different kinds of nutritional deficiencies that will lead to birth complications. So anyone who's getting ready to have a baby or is pregnant right now, that book is full of a ton of good information just to make your pregnancy and birth a more smoother process. Postpartum too, like nutrient stores have everything to do with your postpartum experience as well.
Yeah. How did your husband prepare for a free birth? Was that like, I was in the room with my sister and her husband when my sister was giving birth, and men, it's really challenging for men to see. And, you know, my daughter's dad, it was really challenging for him to see me in so much pain and, you know, giving birth. So yeah. Did he have to do anything to prepare for that, knowing that it was just the two of you?
My husband is phenomenal. Like, he's so supportive. In fact, with my first, when I just said like, hey, I don't want to vaccinate our kids, he didn't argue with me. He just said, I don't know why, but if you could give me more information, I would love that. I love that. I love that response. And he was the same way when I told him I wanted a free birth. I was like, I want to do it myself. I think that I'm very capable. And he said, that makes me very nervous, but I trust you. And so something I did for him is I found a midwife here in Colorado. She gave up her license to, because in Colorado, like the state is very invasive with midwives. You know, the midwives are loyal to the state. They're not loyal to you. And I'm like, I don't want the state in my house. That was why I didn't want a midwife. Like, I don't want the state in my house. So I found a midwife that gave up her license to do free births kind of under the radar. So she didn't have to report to anybody. And I'm like, okay, we can go with her. If anything happens, she'll be on call for support. So I did have someone on call for him, and that made him feel better. And she ended up being amazing. She got there like 10 minutes after the birth and just helped me clean up and check the baby and checked me. And then she was on her way. And so, yeah, he was supportive, but I also showed him that like I was doing the work, that I was educating myself. And I think that that made him more confident in me as well.
That's beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Hi loves, just interrupting this episode for a quick moment to talk about a product that I have been using over the past couple months on my healing journey, and it's castor oil packs, and they are amazing. So amazing. I highly, highly recommend castor oil packs. Queen of the Thrones is my go-to. The castor oil is organic, as well as the packs are organic cotton, and they are so easy to use. And I mostly use the liver pack on the right side, as well as one for my neck for the thyroid. But there are many, many different packs that you can use, and castor oil has so many, so many health benefits. And so with the link in the show notes, you can get a 10% discount by using code LisaHillier10, and I would love to hear how your healing journey goes with the castor oil pack. So please let me know. And as well, the castor oil is amazing when navigating perimenopause and menopause. It helps so much to balance your hormones. So definitely check it out.
I was able to go that way. You yeah. spoke about the state being in your house. And I know, like, I follow you on Instagram, and there's a lot of reels that you create around not trusting the government.
Yeah.
And I'm right in there with you. What don't you trust the government about right now? Like, are there any agendas out there that you're like, what's going on here?
Which one? Oh my gosh.
Give us five.
Five? Okay. Well, the monopoly on the food system, you know, demonizing like the world's most nutrient dense foods, trying to make it really hard for farmers and ranchers to raise cattle and to grow crops because they want a monopoly on food. That's why there's this big push towards like factory printed meat and like just so things that are so anti-human. I know, so anti-human. And that's why you've got Germany. If y'all don't know about this, go check it out. Germany and France right now are in a big protest against their government because they're imposing such severe taxes on them that's making it damn near impossible for them to do their job. So that's a big one, trying to control the food system. And I mean, you're in Canada. Raw milk is totally illegal.
Totally Why? Illegal.
Why? That's ridiculous.
You can get cocaine easier than you can get raw milk. Like actually a certain percentage, and I could be totally wrong on this, a certain percentage of cocaine is legal, but raw milk is completely illegal. Like it's
okay. So that's another conspiracy, right? So cannabis, psilocybin, personally, I'm a big fan. I use both regularly. Love it. That's totally demonized here, right? The whole war on drugs, like back in the 60s, oh, this stuff is so terrible for it's because those kinds of things open your mind. They make you more loving towards people. They raise your consciousness. They raise the collective consciousness. But what do we have here? Just like you said, fentanyl, cocaine, alcohol. There's freaking an alcohol store on every single corner. And that's okay?
Yeah. What do you think the underlying, I don't know if I'm going to word this question right, but alcohol, I'm sober. And for 8 years, and alcohol is such a normalized part of our everyday, like birthdays, Christmas, everything has alcohol. And I think this has been like a scheme of the governments, the industry all along to make people numb and dumb down and, you know, kind of in a fantasy world. I don't know if that's the right word, but kind of take them out of reality in a big way. Yeah.
Well, I saw some, I'm probably not going to relay this the best, but I saw something that was like, there's a reason they call it spirits, you know, like the spirits that are in alcohol. Alcohol is a depressant. I think that it lowers your spirit. I think it lowers your consciousness and your vibration, and you're right, it makes you numb. Is where, let's say if you did something like mushrooms, mushrooms literally connect new neural pathways in your brain. That's why it's really good for people who have PTSD and ADHD, because it elevates your brain. It elevates your consciousness. It helps you to become more aware and connected of your, in your body. And so of course, if you have like an all oppressing government that wants to control you, alcohol is going to be everywhere. Of course it is. It makes so much sense.
So crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. But it does. It makes so much sense.
Oh, yeah.
Because what do people do? They work their 9 to 5, 5 days a week. They go hang out at the pub after work and kind of drink their sorrows away until the next day. Like, it's this constant hamster wheel of life, you know? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That was two, right? You've done two. Got some more for us?
Big pharma, obviously. You create the, okay, I would say big pharma and being, and big food being in bed together, because you poison the food. You have a monopoly on food. That's going to make people sick, and it's going to drive people in the arms of the pharmaceutical industry. So you have a revolving door between the two. And what does that do? Low vibration, sickness, easy to control. Mm-hmm. Like it all goes, but no matter what conspiracy you're talking about, that's what it all comes back to. So yeah, just even having a monopoly on healthcare. Like, do you know, are you familiar with the Flexner Report?
No.
Ooh, I might get the dates wrong here, but I don't remember his first name, but the John D. Rockefeller in the 1930s, found out that he could monetize petroleum, and he could create pharmaceutical drugs out of petroleum. But at the time in America, holistic medicine was like the norm. Chiropractors, acupuncturists, herbalists, like that was the norm here. So John D. Rockefeller funded what was called the Flexner Report, which basically was a report saying like, all this is quackery, all this is woohoo. And we grew up with that, you know, like, oh, like holistic medicine, like those people are wonky. And he promoted Western-based medicine, allopathic medicine. The curriculum that medical students are taught is prescription-based Rockefeller curriculum. So even like the West and its monopoly on pharmaceuticals came from the demonization of holistic medicine all the way back in the 19, don't quote me on those dates. Someone listening probably knows more than I do, but it was around that time.
Okay.
So that's another one.
Yeah. That's a big one. It's like this constant cycle. What do you do kind of from a health perspective to ensure the optimal health for you and your family?
I do a lot. And before I go into all of that, I just want to say, like, I love what I do. I love being a holistic practitioner. But I hate that living in America, it has to be such a big part of your life for you to just be like, healthy. And even with all the work that I do, like there's just so much shit around us that it's hard. So it's frustrating that like this has to be such a big part of our life. I don't want to talk about health all the time. I don't want to be concerned with what my kids are coming in contact with all the time. Like it sucks. And I try not to be paranoid because I think that your attitude towards things can be just as toxic as the things that you're avoiding. So I try not to be like paranoid about it. But yeah, it's just, it's sad that we live in a world that makes it so hard for you and your family to be healthy. I hate that. But something that I do is try to buy my meat and my produce and my eggs and my milk from local farmers and ranchers. So I have a source for milk. I get eggs and meat from Shardula Ranch. If you're here in Northern Colorado, Shardula Ranch, grass-fed, grass-finished beef, and they love their cows, treat their cows very well. And so I love buying from them. I have my kids on something called biofulvic minerals. So it's fulvic and humic acid, just to replenish their mineral storage, to help with gentle detox continually, just give their body some additional support at a foundational level. Sunshine, I think something that people underestimate is the power of the sun. So getting outside as much as we can, grounding, taking your shoes off, connecting yourself with the earth. The earth and its energy pulls, like, you know, the EMFs and all the negative energy that gets into our bodies and just helps reset our bodies at an energetic level. So yeah, that's some common practices that we do here.
The sunshine's a big one, because I think that that's kind of a bit of a conspiracy theory, or like something that they lied to us about as well. Was, you know, I know when I was growing up, it was like the ozone layer and you've got to wear sunscreen and the sun's going to hurt you and all this stuff, like avoiding the sun. And like the sun's one of the best things for you, for your health, like ever. So it's just interesting.
And I actually grew up. No, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. Go ahead.
So I grew up
with that. It's just interesting what they lied to us. Yeah. Yeah.
I know. It's like if the government's telling you it's bad for you, it most likely is not. And I grew up with that propaganda, you know, because my mom had skin cancer like 4 times growing up. And that's what she would tell me. Oh, it's because I laid in the sun when I was young. I sunbathed too much. And so I grew up like, okay, so the sun is bad. I never went outside. I've been super pasty my whole life. I hated summer because I was afraid of the sun. And then when I started getting into this line of work, I was like, the sun is the source of life. Nothing is alive without the sun. Plants, animals, everything revolves around the sun. And then you have humans that are like, oh no, I need sunscreen to block the sun. Interestingly enough, sunscreen is petroleum-based, of course, right? There's a video that you can find online of someone putting sunscreen on under a UV light, and it looks like black tar that they're putting on their skin. So people are like, oh, well, the sun, like, it gives you skin cancer. I'm like, well, if you're putting chemicals on your skin, that sun is baking the chemicals onto your skin, of course it's going to cause a reaction. Now, that's not the only thing that causes people to be reactive to the sun. Nutrient deficiencies can cause you to be sensitive, but seed oils, so diets that are really inflammatory, it oxidizes in the body, which causes your skin to be really prone to sunburn. So if someone is struggling with sunburn, it's not the sun. It's something going on inside of you that's making you prone to that. So the more you do eat like an ancestral based diet, you're getting plenty of healthy fats, plenty of healthy protein. Your skin's going to react a lot better to the sun. And something else interesting, you know how they tell us like, don't look at the sun. Looking at the sun's going to make you go blind. Now, I'm not saying do this at high noon, because obviously like that's very bright, right? But in the morning and in the evening, you get the full color spectrum of light. And when that enters your eyes, it energizes your whole body. It gives you a natural release of hormones. So when you wake up, one of the best things that you can do first thing in the morning, go look at the sun, 10, 15 minutes, stare directly at it. You're going to get a beautiful natural release of cortisol that's going to help you wake up. It's going to reset your circadian rhythm that will give you more energy throughout the day. It's going to help you sleep better. Like looking at the evening sun starts to produce melatonin. So your body syncs with the cycle of the sun and it just makes your whole life better.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so integral to sleep and just feeling your best. But what a lot of people are doing is looking at screens first thing in the morning and right before bed. And it's like that just shifts it the other way. Getting that sunshine in the morning and in the evening. So beautiful. What's your take on the whole pronouns feminist wave that's kind of happening right now, where the lines of gender are really getting blurred? Do you see that as a conspiracy theory or something to not trust the government around?
So when you have a societal issue, I think that a lot of people get hung up on the symptom, right? Oh, men suck. Men this, women are that. And it's like, how did we get here though? Like, how did we get to a place where we're feminizing men, we're masculizing women, we're taking away the innocence of children? Like, you can see all of these things happening. You know, blurring the line of the genders is not about inclusivity. It's it's taking away the foundational, like, what is foundational for a healthy society? You can't have a healthy society without masculinity and femininity. You can't have a healthy society without strong family units, without community. So when you undermine all of those things, you have a society that is morally debased. There is no right or wrong. There is no truth. You can be whatever you want to be. So that's moral relativism, right? Oh, what's good for me might not be good for you. Like, morals are relative. You cannot have a healthy, functional society without some basis of truth. So what it is it's erasing foundational truths to morally debase an entire society and make them easier to control. Remember how I said, like, it all goes back to the same thing, right? Gender, pronouns, yes. Feminism, like, it's no different. It is no different.
Yeah. And then when you think about these sex changes that are happening, those people are on pharmaceuticals for the rest of their life and surgeries for the rest of their life. Like, it's a constant cycle, keeping people in the system, you know, and even what I've heard is kids that have never, ever thought if they were a she, he, they, them, they're just, you know, whatever they are, girl, boy, whatever. Now they're getting so much anxiety because they're feeling so pressured to decide what their gender is. And it's like, so then these kids are having insane anxiety and all of that kind of stuff. Well, then they're being prescribed meds for that. You know, like, it's this constant. Yeah. What do you do with your kids to kind of keep them? I know you can't keep your kids fully safe in this world, and that's, you know, not the intention. But how do you keep them kind of rooted in who they are?
I think it helps a lot that me and my husband both work from home. So they've got mom and dad around all the time. My husband is a great father, and we don't do screen time. I would say total screen time a week is maybe 45 minutes. I read something that was like, give your children an iPad when you want their childhood to end. And that stuck with me. Like, I don't want that for you. Like, I want you to be outside. I want you to be playing. I want you to be getting dirty and exploring and having adventures. And so I just try to give them a childhood without technology the best that I can. I want them to be kids. We're going to homeschool. So I think that where a lot of kids come in contact with this propaganda is media. You know, a lot of these kids that come out, like the detransition movement, they pretty much will all tell you that they fell into this on social media. So I think social media for kids is a big culprit of this ideology. A lot of these kids too come from broken homes, but going back to like tear down the family, right? If you tear down the family, your kids are more vulnerable. So having a strong family unit is also going to keep your kids safe. Traditional family, traditional values, and trying to give them the most normal childhood that I can in this crazy world.
It is crazy right now. But I think, like, when you were speaking to the farmers in France and Germany, is it France and Germany right now that are doing the huge protests? It just reminds me of when Canada had the big truckers convoy. And it was so, those things give me hope that we will get through this, or there will be like a big shift that takes place. Because from what I understand with the farmers, like, they're driving in tractors everywhere, aren't they? Right around Parliament in these countries. And
What was the energy in Canada like when that happened?
Oh my gosh, it was so powerful. Because I am not vaccinated, and in Canada you couldn't go in anywhere. Like, I couldn't even use a bathroom. So it was like just the biggest like sigh of relief and hope. Like, it was so emotional, and there were people like on all the overpasses, like cheering them on. And it was just like, the energy is like, you know, when your hockey team wins or something, yeah. That's what's coming to mind. It was like that everywhere. And then of course there were people that thought it was absolutely ridiculous. So there was lots of stuff on social media and all that. But, yeah, it was like the one time in a long time that I'm like, I'm proud to be Canadian right now. Yeah. Cause we've kind of got a bit of a, we've got quite the prime minister at the moment. Yeah. So yeah, the energy was wild. It was really, but the crazy thing, and I didn't know this, is there was also a protest happening at the border in Coutts. The guys from that are still in jail now.
What?
Just innocent men that were protesting. They're still in jail.
Wow.
They have families. Like, it's been a couple years. So that's really sad.
Yeah, because I mean, Trudeau came out and like, I mean, he was closing down people's bank accounts and it got really nasty. Like after like Trudeau and his, you know, just the way that he handled it was so disgusting. Like, what was the energy like after that? Do you feel like Canada feels defeated, or do you feel like you're on the brink of something uprising again?
Because he did that where he pulled that war emergency act and then the Ukraine Russia war, like literally the next day. So it was like almost everybody forgot about that. So it did, it was a big sense of like defeat. Cause in my mind, after the way that he acted when all that was going on, like the protests, I was like, how can this guy come back to office? Like, there's no way he can come back. And then attention diverted. Nobody gave a shit about what he did anymore. The war was happening in Ukraine, you know? It was a big sense of defeat, and it's still, I think, lingering, and there's more things that he's doing that are crazy. You know, he's a huge supporter of this gender ideology and the blurring of the lines and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, we're praying that he doesn't get in again, but he's in for another year. So, but what happens in the States usually dictates to us what happens here as well. Yeah. So
do you think that there will be another uprising? Yeah. Yeah. 2024, baby. That's when they pull out all their tricks. I'm so nervous.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be a year. Yeah. I do think there'll be another uprising. I really do. Yeah, a lot of people think that this is going to be a big year. I don't know what it'll look like.
I think that everyone can feel the energy. Like, we don't know what's going to happen, but I think collectively, like, there's this anticipation, like, something is building, whether that is governments pulling another COVID, but significantly worse, whether that's us rising up, like, I don't know. But what I will say is, like, everyone's part that they play matters. Everyone's voice matters. Even if you have like a little tiny corner of social media, like anything that you can do, even supporting local farmers and ranchers, like any small acts of rebellion, like it matters. We're all in this fight. And I think that until we understand that like we need each other and we're one collective consciousness, like they're going to keep winning until we come together. So for everyone listening, unity. Unity is the answer, not division.
No. And that's like just even coming back to the gender stuff, COVID, there's all that essence of division underneath all of that. You know, it's dividing people. And 15-minute cities, that's the big thing right now, those smart cities and stuff. So the more that we can just say no is huge.
Absolutely. Don't mind me. I'm going to plug my computer in, but I think I have seen a shift in energy just with people realizing that like divisiveness is the name of the game. That's why, I mean, every single country, it's us versus them. No matter where you look, there's some kind of agenda where they're dividing people. So yeah, I think that's the biggest answer, realizing that like, hey, we're better together and we have way more in common with each other than we do these freaking psychopaths.
Yeah. Yeah. And we can not agree on everything, but we can still like sit at the same table and have a conversation.
Absolutely.
You know, yes. It doesn't have to be you're out of my life because, you know, something that is relatively small, you know, the way that COVID divided, like that was insane. And it just feels like there's more and more of that, but it's like we can still have conversations and be humans together.
Yes. And it's like, you know, we're literally paying taxes to psychopathic pedophiles. I promise you have more in common with your neighbor.
That is true. That is very true. What's been your biggest lesson along the way?
In what regard?
Just in general, biggest lesson in life. I feel, yeah, just biggest lesson in life.
To take, I'm going to sound like Jordan Peterson here. He's Canadian.
Yeah.
I think my biggest lesson I learned from him, which would be take as much responsibility for your life as you can. Mm-hmm. That has been the way that I've lived my life for the past 6 years, and so much happiness and growth has come out of me just taking responsibility for me.
Mm, that's a big one. Mm-hmm. It's like the more you take responsibility for your life, the more you break out of
like
the systems.
Absolutely. Like don't be a victim. Don't make excuses. Okay. We've all been dealt a shitty hand in some regard, but what happened to you may not be fair. But it is your responsibility to heal those parts of yourself. Cause if you don't, like, you're just going to pass it to the people around you. You're going to pass it on to your children.
Yeah. Like,
be responsible for yourself and do the work would be my biggest lesson.
Yeah. That's a big one. Yeah. Do you guys have animals out there? Do you have animals on your land?
Oh, no, I'm in an apartment.
Okay. Okay.
No
okay,
animals.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you have a dream for that or no?
Yes. Oh my gosh. We're actually, this should be our last year here. So we're hoping to get on some land like next year, God willing.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Where do you see kind of humanity going? Like, what's your vision for? I feel like if we all hold this vision of what we want the world to look like, we're all kind of collectively moving towards that. What's your vision for the world?
I know that things are like really crazy and there's a lot to be afraid of, but fear is the lowest frequency. If you keep humanity in fear, they're not going to wake up. They're not going to come together. So I have seen, I don't like, do you know what I mean when I say you can feel it? Like you can feel something shifting and it feels positive to me. I genuinely think that humanity is going to win. I do. I have so much hope for us. I have so much hope for the future. I think the reason that things feel so chaotic right now is, you know, like when you expose a narcissist and they get very forceful, like, oh, you figured me out. So like now I'm really going to come down with the hammer. I feel like that's why things feel so chaotic right now, because they've been exposed. COVID woke way more people up, I think, than they anticipated. And so now they're getting very forceful with pushing through their agenda. But I see people rising up. I see people speaking out, from like really high level people to people in communities. And I think that we're headed in the right direction. And I think it's going to be bumpy. Things are going to get worse before they get better. But I have faith in us. I do.
Yeah. Yeah. Me too. Yeah. Where can people find you?
I am Sensibly Shy on Instagram. No numbers, no underscores.
Okay. And do you have any offerings or anything else on your heart that you want to share before we close, love?
I think that you were going to ask me something about love. Do you want to end there?
Somebody else. Okay. What was it about love?
You wanted to ask me what my biggest lesson that I learned about love was.
Okay. Somebody else said that the other day too, a podcast interview. And I'm like, did I write that? Okay. Well, that sounds beautiful. Okay. your biggest lesson around love. Yeah.
My biggest lesson around love has been that it's not supposed to be hard. I grew up in a family where everyone's marriage was shitty. Affairs, like drug abuse, divorce, just I didn't have a good example of what a healthy relationship was supposed to look like. And I even was previously married before my now husband, and it kind of confirmed what I grew up with. We're like, it's a fight. It's supposed to be hard. Like you just gotta stick with it and go to therapy and like figure it out. But like marriage is hard and it sucks. And then I married my now husband and I'm like, that's not true. I mean, I'm not saying that you're not going to go through tough times together, because you will. And I think that's necessary for your growth as a couple. But it's not supposed to be hard, and it's not supposed to be a fight all of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there one thing that you say would contribute to you guys having a beautiful marriage?
Going back to what I said about taking responsibility, we're both responsible for ourselves. You're not going to fix me. I'm not going to fix you. But let's do the best that we can individually, so together we're better.
Yeah, that's a powerful one. Yeah. Do you have any offerings that you want to share coming up?
So my youngest son is going to be one here pretty soon. So I haven't been taking clients, but I'm going to be starting in February. So consultations are free. You can always message me if you would like to book one. That's pretty much all I'm offering right now. I'm only taking like 2 clients a month just because my priority is my children. But yeah, if anybody wants to learn more about how to support their body on a foundational level, do you know my Instagram? You know where to find me.
Yeah, and I'll be in the show notes where everybody can reach out. Well, thank you. I love your reels on Instagram.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me for an episode of the Phoenix Rising podcast. Please like, share, download, subscribe if you enjoyed this episode. And I will see you next week for another episode on the Phoenix Rising podcast. Sending so much love.